Hello and welcome to the Vegan Group's Noon Step Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Jackie and I am an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during this meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend, but we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Vegan Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from our AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day. Then we will split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. I have asked Michael to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Hi, everybody. My name is Michael. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Here are the steps we took. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make an amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you so much, Michael. Appreciate that. Today we're going to hear a talk on step 10, and I'll read step 10 again. It is continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Please give a warm welcome to Mike K. from Wall, New Jersey. Thank you so much, Mike, for being with us. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Kim, thanks for setting me up with this. Kim and I share a home group. Well, actually, she comes to Lamplighters a lot. Are you part of? Yeah, you are. I'm sorry. my name is Mike K, and my sober date is December 19th of 2012. My sponsor is Steve H. Just quickly qualify, I had my last drink on December 17th of 2012. Didn't realize it would be my last drink at the, I wound up going to a rehab just because I hit an emotional bottom. I arrived at that rehab 2 days sober. I had a spiritual experience, as we read about in our literature, while I was in that rehab. And quickly, I'll just before I get into step 10, I'll just say exactly what that spiritual experience was. About 7 days, 7 to 10 days into the rehab, I realized that there was hope for alcoholics. I knew I was an alcoholic from a very early age. However, I was resigned to the fact that I would be an alcoholic until death. I did not realize that there was a daily reprieve from this spiritual malady that we all suffer from. In that rehab, I made a promise to myself, to my higher power, that if I didn't feel like doing something, that was a very good indicator that I need to do it. As we all learned, or I'll speak for myself, as I've learned in this program, that my natural instincts tend to be the incorrect ones. That's a nice segue into step 10. I was lucky enough to hook up with a sponsor who had a very good understanding of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and a knowledge of the first 164 pages of our big book. And he took me through it line by line. And before he took me through it line by line, he had me write my sober date on the inside of the jacket, and he had me write what I have become to be one of the most important definitions in my recovery, which is willingness is taking action during disbelief. That is something that has really changed my life. And as I went through the 12 steps, I had to, take action during disbelief quite a few times, particularly with the third step, and I would say the 11th step as well. So let's get into the 10th step. The 10th step, as was just read, is continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. This is, to me, kind of like the whole program wrapped up into one action step. Each night, which I it's an honest program. I do not do it every night. I am undisciplined by nature. And I am also profoundly lazy, so I fall short quite a bit with doing a nightly inventory. But I'll tell you how my sponsor took me through the 10th step in particular. So I ask myself, where was I resentful? Where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I afraid? I answer those questions, and then I continue to asks some more questions, which are, did I think about myself mostly today? Do I owe an amends? Was I kind and loving towards all? Did I keep something to myself that needs to be discussed at once? And then after I review all of those questions, I ask my higher power for right direction. And for the strength to stay on the path of Alcoholics Anonymous and to continue to do the next right thing. I have been, for the most part, relieved of the resentment, that first one. Where was I resentful? Notwithstanding, obviously there are situations where I get into resentment, but that is not the one that crops up for me all that much. I do, because of these 12 steps, because of this program, because of being sober, I really do put myself to the best of my ability on a spiritual plane where I am never neither above or below. I'm just a part of, right? And I feel like if I am, it's tough to be in resentment when I feel like we're all on the same plane in that spiritual realm, because there is no judgment, right? We're just human beings doing the best we can. So I very rarely fall into the trap of resentment. By no means am I perfect with that one. But let me get into the next one. Where was I dishonest? There is a lot of dishonesty in my day, particularly with the overvaluing of my career and that I'm not good enough for it, right? So person to person, daily life, I really don't struggle, but within the workplace, within this competitive free market that we live in, I find myself invariably falling prey to fear and dishonesty. Okay, I'm not good enough. The work I'm doing for this company is not good enough. And it's a tough one for me. You know, I've been just a quick backstory. I've been with this company since I was 19, and I'm about to turn 47 next month. So I have a very long history with this company. The first half of it, if not 60% of my tenure, was in active alcoholism, where I was not as accountable as I am today in this program. I showed up to work every day, except towards the end. I had a couple of instances on especially Fridays and Mondays where I just decided not to come to work or let my supervisors know either. Notwithstanding the very end of my alcoholic behavior, I was there, but I wasn't there. Right? Was I present? Was I kind and loving towards all? Heck no. Was I resentful? Absolutely. I didn't like my boss. I didn't like the higher ups at the company headquarters. I thought that they were selfish and they didn't care about their employees. You know, just a pretty, as I've come to understand, a typical kind of outlook that alcoholics like me suffer from, where we're being victimized, right? We're not being treated correctly. Of course, there are instances because higher ups are humans as well. Those do, you know, those do happen, but not to the level of this alcoholic's dishonest perception. I was, you know, constantly looking at the higher ups, whether or not they were doing the right thing or not, and in my mind, they were never doing the right thing. So, that's where resentment in my recovery now has really, as I stated before, reduced to something that really doesn't crop up all that often because of this program. But I really do get stuck in the fear and the dishonesty of my career and my place within it. I think it's worth mentioning as I was going through the steps, probably about 8 years ago, in the middle of the fourth and fifth step, where I tell my sponsor one of my fears, one of the bigger ones was my career, and that I'm not good enough, and I'm not doing a good enough job. And he heard me say this for months and months as we did our fourth and fifth step. And at the end of that year, I won the company's very first Employee of the Year honor. And if that wasn't the most amazing bit of evidence that my dishonest, delusional feeling and thought process behind my work for this company, if that wasn't direct, you know, that wasn't God saying, "Look how good you're doing. You just won the very first Employee of the Year award for your company," you know. And one of my favorite cognitive biases, sorry if I'm getting too technical, but confirmation bias, right? I only look as I used to, and I still do with certain respects. I used to only look at the evidence that supported my claim, which is I am not good enough and that I'm going to lose my job, right? I've come to find out that alcoholics are particularly good at this one. We like to look for the evidence that supports our claim and ignore all of the overwhelming evidence to the contrary. Just like I did for 20 years of alcoholic abuse, where it was everything else except the drinking, right? Where it was overwhelmingly obvious to everybody who's not an alcoholic that it was the drinking that was, you know, getting me jammed up. I've never been asked, "What were you thinking in sobriety?" Right? I've been asked that question so many times before I got sober. What were you thinking? And most of the time, it was I wasn't. I was acting on my misguided instincts, and also under the influence of alcohol. Getting back on track with the 10th step and dishonesty. So that was my first glaring example that my perception is way warped from reality. This fact that I was always under this constant fear that I was going to lose my job and I'm not good enough, and then I won that award, and my sponsor was so happy to point out this is how alcoholics think. You know, we do not our feelings aren't facts, as I've come to understand now. Especially my feelings of fear and inadequacy. They're very rarely true, but I feel them nonetheless, right? And for this alcoholic, my emotions are still powerful, you know, and I listen to them a little bit more than I should, which is why this step is so important, you know, because when we put pen to paper and we write down facts, it's hard to ignore them, you know, when they're right in front of your face in black and white. But in my mind, where my alcoholism lives, it's very easy to ignore all of the overwhelming evidence to support my claim that I'm not good enough. So this is the one that I still continue to struggle with. I'm 10 years sober now. I've been working the steps, you know, for a good 7 to 8 of them. And I still struggle with this. There's work to be done. And that's okay. It tells us very clearly in our literature also that it's progress, not perfection. I have made progress with my dishonest thoughts about my career and my worth within this role that I have. My next, if we go down the list, resentful, dishonest, afraid, another fear I have is being in a romantic relationship. I have, over the last 10 years of my sobriety, dated infrequently, and I've always found reasons to find issues with any budding relationship so that I don't have to actually commit. So I have a huge fear of commitment. Which again is not a surprise, I'm sure, to you folks listening, because it's said often in meetings that finance and romance are some of the bigger challenges that we alcoholics face, and I am certainly no exception to that. If I'm being honest, with the fear of commitment, it's a little bit different than my dishonesty with my career. I don't feel that I'm not, so with relationships, I don't feel that I'm not worthy. I think I'm just lazy and don't want to put in the work to have a you know, a successful relationship. And I take the easier, softer way. I stay single and I don't challenge myself. I don't put myself in a relationship that's going to be challenging, because they all are. And that's maybe perhaps another bit of dishonesty that I have. So there is some dishonesty, that there is such a thing as a perfect relationship and a perfect woman for me, right? That's just not true. That's not the way the world works. There's no perfection. I know that intellectually, in my fiber, it's not there yet. You know, I haven't overcome this hurdle of, you know, of fear of being in a relationship. So more work to be done there. Let's see, resentful, dishonest, selfish. Yes, I'm a selfish human being. I don't, I've become less selfish in this program because of the step work. But I am still, there's a question in my 10th step inventory. Did I think about myself mostly today? And it's always yes. You know, it's always yes. Is it completely? No. I have a joke with my sponsees that if I can get to 80-20, I'm doing okay. If I can think about others for 20% of my day, then that's good. Obviously, we want to do better than that, but that's kind of a joke that I make. 50-50 would be something that would be pretty darn good. I don't know if I'll ever get there, but I'm going to keep trying. And why am I thinking about myself mostly? Because of this fear and this dishonesty. It takes up a lot of my bandwidth. When I'm not in the, one of the few times per day when I'm not in that fear-based mode is when I'm working with others. And I do have sponsees. I've been lucky enough to take several men through the book, and I have two young men right now who are in their fourth and fifth step. So that is, those are examples where I'm not thinking about myself. I am directly working with others and trying to show them the way of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's just an amazing thing, as I'm sure many of you are aware. I also, so another question in the 10th step, I often keep to myself what should be discussed with others at once. Why I do that? That might be some arrogance there, that I know better, and maybe I don't want somebody else's perspective on something. Maybe I want to hold on to my concepts. In my day-to-day life, I don't struggle with any particular situation that this question might apply to, but maybe the one that I just kind of told on myself to this group about my fear of commitment and not wanting to do the work to be in a relationship. I've talked to others about it, but it's on my mind more than I let on to my sponsor and to my network. It's a known thing to all the guys and gals in my network that I'm just like this perennially single guy, and sometimes we make jokes about it, and I actually find humor in a lot of my shortcomings. But I don't think I discuss this enough with my peers and my sponsor for sure. It's something I need to, it's something I need to do. I really do want a relationship, It's another beautiful layer of life, right? Like completely intertwining yourself with another human being and relying on each other in a healthy way, not in a codependent way. It is something I want, as much as I joke about I love single life, and I do, but at the end of the day, most days, I'm pretty sad that I don't have a relationship. I'm going to be 47, and my last serious relationship was when I was in active alcoholism, and I've had my 10 years of sobriety, which have been amazing. But I have been very stingy in my and selfish in keeping myself out of a relationship because there's probably a nice woman out there that would like to be in a relationship, that maybe I'm the right fit for. And I have been very selfish in making myself available for that purpose. It's a beautiful part of life to have a relationship. My mom and dad had the most beautiful marriage. My dad passed away 4 years ago. And my mom was, they were together since my mom was 16 and they just missed their 50th anniversary. And I have been raised in just a beautiful home with a loving, mom and dad, had a beautiful marriage. And, that is something that I would like to have. So there is an example of where I fall short. I should be discussing this more with my peers. Was I kind and loving towards all? I do pretty well with that. As I said, I don't suffer too much with resentments. So to me, resentments fuel anger and right, and bad speech and frustrated comments and nasty emails and temper tantrums. I don't really, I mean, of course I have moments, but not like before I had the steps in my life. I can honestly say for the most part, I am kind and loving towards all. I think an exception might be with humor. I do find a lot of levity and humor, and I make, not jokes at a particular person's expense, but perhaps a mindset or a worldview that I might not agree with, I'll make jokes about. I really, in the strictest sense of the word, I should not do that because it's not kind and loving, right? Perhaps I'm being too hard on myself, but I don't there. So let me say it this way. I don't have a, dare I talk about politics for a second. I don't have any strong opinions left, right, or center. Well, maybe I do for center. I feel like maybe for me, the best way is to see both sides and kind of meet in the middle. But I like to make jokes about former presidents. I like to make jokes about current presidents because it's fun. But it's probably not the most constructive behavior. So I'll just end with to wrap up that question, kind and loving towards all. With humor, I think I fall short there. I probably make jokes that I shouldn't. But on the grand scheme of things, I think it's okay, but progress, not perfection, I suppose. Wow, I'm talking a lot about things that I fall short with. So this is good that you've asked me to do this, Kim. Maybe I'll light a fire under my butt. At the end of my inventory, I like to, as I was instructed, ask God for direction, which obviously is part of the 11th step, which is why I see the 10th step as like a kind of all-encompassing framework for all of our steps. And like each of those questions address pretty much everything in the in all 12 steps. So it's like a it's the program. The 10th step is just like it's a good report card for how you're doing. Right. So I do struggle with that one as well. I did for a very long time have a very, very rigorous and religious meditative practice, which I have fallen out of. It involved sitting on a cushion in a particular position and doing very specific rituals and meditative practices, really life-changing stuff. And I find myself straying from that more than I find myself dedicated to it. Perhaps another trait of alcoholism, if not definitely another trait of alcoholism, black and white. I'm either going to sit on this cushion and levitate, or I'm not going to meditate at all, right? And progress to be made there as well. But in that point of the 10th step nightly inventory, where it does ask for you to appeal to your higher power as you understand it for direction and guidance, I do it, just maybe not to the ability that I think into the extent I think I can based on my previous experience with it. How am I doing on time?
About 7 minutes.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll wrap up by saying that the 10th step is vitally important. As I've stated, when you there's something that happens, right? When you take out a pen and paper, as you know, I cheat. I do it in my head. You could cheat a lot when you do it in your head. When you have a pen and paper in your hand, there's just no way to cheat. When I put that pen to paper, as my sponsor told me, something happens. God gets involved, right? Maybe I'll end with a funny story about that. When I was going through my step work with my sponsor, he had started to ask me to write out my story using a pen and paper. And I started to outline my story. And when we met the following time, he says, how are you doing with your writing? I said, fantastic. He goes, okay, let's see it. So I opened up my iPhone. Maybe you can see where I'm going with this. And I opened up a note document, and it was all text. And he goes, this isn't what I asked you to do. And I said, I don't understand. He said, I told you to take a pen and paper and write out your story. Classic example of how an alcoholic just, oh, I know what you mean. I'm going to do it my way, though. Right. And I had pages and pages of speech to text. And he says, I'm not reading that. And I was so mad. I went to a meeting. It was the, if you guys remember the Tuesday meeting in Manasquan on South Avenue. It was a circle closed discussion, and I just went off to this group about how my sponsor was such a jerk, and I did all this hard work to write out my story, and he wouldn't read it because I used voice to text because he said, take out pen and paper. And I was just so mad, and everybody in the meeting was laughing their asses off because they were like, you ignored the most important part, pen to paper. And it's just an important thing. Like I just said, we can cheat when it's in our minds. And after I calmed down with my sponsor and he told me why we use a pen and paper, he did explain to me that something magical happens when you take pen and put it to paper. God gets involved and the truth comes out. So, an important thing, right? It really is and again, I'm reminding myself right now as I talk to you, how important and what a part of, I'm really shortchanging myself that I don't take out a pen and paper every night. Kim asking me to speak specifically on the 10 step was my God wink saying, hey, buddy, if you're going to start talking about the 10 step to a bunch of anonymous alcoholics, you might want to start doing it yourself. So, thanks, guys, for I know I have a few minutes left, but I think I'm kind of at the end here, and I really appreciate you listening to me today.